Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable quality clothing right here in the USA, because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy, you're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Humane Podcast, your tech insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-first world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and tech leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprises. Welcome back, listeners. Introducing Humane, the Tech Insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-driven world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and leaders that are creating the world that we live in for both consumers and the enterprise. And on today's episode, we bring to you Rob Gorziev, who is the co-founder and CEO of PsiCognito. Rob, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Hey, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so excited. Anytime I get to bring on founders and leaders who have been part of Israel, you know, where my dad is from. So really great to have you here on the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I always love bringing forward, you know, Silicon Valley and Israel's tech scene. So, but to get us started, you know, Rob, you've had an incredible journey, right? Of course, serving in the Israeli Intelligence Corps, Unit 8200, and you founded PsiCognito and built this great company in Silicon Valley. To start us out, can you share a pivotal moment or experience from your time in the intelligence that shaped your approach to cybersecurity and led you to ultimately create, found, and scale PsiCognito?
So I remember there was this one point in time after I became the leader of this domain, very relevant to what PsiCognito does today. And I was looking at what's available out there in terms of open source and commercial solutions related to this domain. And just feeling like one, very few organizations deeply understand the kind of problems you need to solve in this domain. And number two, there are such amazing technologies out there like NLP, natural language processing, that are extremely powerful. Yet, by the way, to this day, crazily enough, are almost not being leveraged at all, or we utilize maybe 5% of their power. For example, anyone who knows Salesforce and such platforms for, well, sales forces, knows that when you manage people, it's hard to understand who's talking to whom at a specific point in time, what's the sentiment of each group regarding each topic, and things like that are problems that from a technological perspective, we could solve 10 plus years ago, truly. Yet, can you do that with Salesforce today in 2024? Not really. And there are many, many such examples. So to your question, I remember that while being very young, I saw this contrast between what's possible and what's almost obvious when you leave the problem and are obsessed with solving some of these problems, especially when it comes to saving humans' lives, and just feeling that a lot more is possible and wanting to be able to challenge myself and folks I work with and try to take on some big challenges that are meaningful that way.
Now, Rob, your company, PsiCognito, recently released a report on web application security testing. How do you see generative AI impacting this landscape, both in terms of creating new vulnerabilities and potentially improving testing processes?
Great question. So maybe to build on what I just said earlier, with respect to deeply understanding where the problems are and being obsessed about solving them versus slowly, gradually improving very old approaches and technologies, one of the biggest problems in AppSec from what we're seeing today is the coverage problem, meaning the tools and processes that were built 20 plus years ago and are still being used today, like Burp Suite and Invicti and many such DAST and SAST capabilities, they mostly require a lot of configuration and a lot of human validation of their output, which can really take between days and weeks per application. One of the things we found in the research was that only half of the e-commerce and PII applications are being protected at all by web application firewalls or equivalent controls. Meaning, even when you look at the most important things to protect, half are not protected whatsoever. It's not even a misconfiguration, it's just complete blind spots in the broad sense. And so when you look at the problem, which is attackers are going to pursue the path of least resistance, they will try to find the easiest way to acquire the data, the financial information, the sensitive information, what have you, to blackmail this company or do other things for usually economic reasons. If we're not protecting a big chunk of our stuff, we're not going to solve this problem. And the easiest thing to do and the most organic improvement you see in every industry is you slowly improve what already exists. And you see some of these vendors and teams use LLMs and other AI technologies to incrementally improve some of those. And there's some excitement about such and equivalent things. But when you look at the actual problem and you find metrics that are meaningful, for example, what percentage of my stuff is being tested at all and how frequently? And if the answer is only half the stuff, and sometimes it's 10%, including maybe especially at very large enterprises, and the frequency of some of this testing is just annually or quarterly at best, while attackers do their thing every day, and AI allows them to do that more frequently and exploit new vulnerabilities, new known vulnerabilities within days versus months now. So from my perspective, and when you know how attackers actually attack and breach organizations and the offensive process that way, you realize that putting more locks on the front door while the back door is unlocked is not going to solve this problem. It's really a security theater kind of a situation where maybe the quote-unquote TSA makes us feel safe, but maybe there is a teeny tiny fence around the airport and anyone can run over that fence with a $5,000 truck and do whatever they want. So that's the kind of one line of thinking that spending time on the, call it, offensive side teaches you. It's the hacker mentality of how things actually happen and what's the most likely approach to stop that path of least resistance approach of the other side, and also being just critical about solving the problem in a meaningful way versus doing very cool things that feel great and allow me to tell a great story about, hey, we're integrating AI into whatever, while the fundamentals are broken or not there. And obviously you want to do both, but you have to start from what is the core problem? What are the one or two or three metrics that really tell me that I'm progressing? And then how do I get there?
It's so fascinating hearing your perspective on AI tools. It's, you know, on one end, Rob, they're being used by attackers to exploit vulnerabilities. Though on the other end, right, with your work at Psycognito, you've shared in the past that AI tools could promise to enhance security operations. Would you provide some specific examples of how today generative AI is being used to effectively improve cybersecurity?
Absolutely. So speaking of these coverage challenges and mapping what you even have and then monitoring it and protecting it, we're seeing many companies, for example, including Fortune 500 companies. If you think about, say, cloud environments, many breaches happen in cloud environments, even though most companies are now using very, very solid, quote unquote, cloud security solutions. And when you talk to these security teams about how did that happen, you're using really good tools which were supposed to be able to stop these attacks and these breaches. The answer is, we didn't know about the asset, or we didn't know there is a coverage gap of these CSPM, CNAPP security controls over that environment. And so one of the most valuable processes, approaches in cybersecurity has always been combining reconnaissance, which is the process where usually attackers, it can also be a red team, go from just company name and tries to understand the organization's structure, what kind of things, be it machines, applications, cloud environments, other digital resources they have that as an attacker you can interact with, and then actively, quote unquote, test them and find ways to really exploit those things to find, again, the path of least resistance to these sensitive information or critical access to interesting stuff. And so traditionally, running reconnaissance on a large enterprise can take weeks or even months. And then the testing portion can also take between a couple of days to a couple of weeks per application. And large organizations can have tens of thousands of web interfaces exposed to the internet. And so using AI today, you can do things like map the whole organization structure and contextualize the connections between these organizations. For example, if right now, you know, the audience, the listeners, you go to Google and you ask Google, what are the subsidiaries of Deloitte or Google itself? And then you compare the answer, which would be very basic, to Wikipedia and Standard & Poor's database and a few others. And then you compare it with what you see in the news or some filings in the last year, you'll get different answers. And each of these answers will have some false positives and some false negatives. And so as a security organization, if you don't even know the organization structure, how can you find the related assets and how can you tell if, well, what exists and whether that's protected or not? So that complex process can be automated today, where it's a, in professional language, it's a recall and precision challenge. Recall in terms of, quote unquote, finding all the stuff. Precision in terms of being very rarely wrong and providing evidence and context so that the user can understand why the machine believes that this random company or this random digital asset is actually mine, right? So that's an opportunity, for example, to save weeks and months of manual work at extremely, today you can achieve, call it 99% recall and 95% precision, which sounded impossible to, I think, most people just a short while ago, and is really hard to achieve. Another interesting challenge that is, well, very challenging at scale, is classifying assets into their business purpose and attributing them to their organizational owners. So if you ask any risk leader or even IT leader, what do they think about their CMDBs and can they trust them? And one of my favorite questions is, what percentage of your IT assets on your CMDB is actually attributed to anyone or classified to anything meaningful? And the answer is usually between 10 to 30%. Well, if that information is supposed to guide risk prioritization and the remediation process itself of vulnerabilities, misconfigurations, etc., what chance do you have to have an effective process? Very low. And security controls usually rely on what's in your CMDB or similar data sets. And so that was also a problem that was extremely interesting to solve, which took a few years, by the way, using NLP and Bayesian ML models. It requires a graph data model of your whole IT ecosystem, essentially, if you want to be precise with heuristics, which is also a different approach to this problem, meaning deterministically, you cannot solve this problem at scale because you literally need thousands of people at a Fortune 100 company, for example, to collaborate on this over months to get it done. And I've never seen it done even once anywhere. If you rely on heuristics that are very precise, then you can solve this problem at scale. And that massively changes what you can do in terms of, say, mean time to remediation of critical risks. And just to contextualize that and what these kind of shifts mean in numbers, because numbers are useful. On average, quote-unquote, vulnerability scanners and the like show you that 3% of all of their findings are high or critical severity. When this company got compromised, they had 8 million open vulnerabilities, of which 2 million were classified as high or critical by the most common vulnerability scanner today in the market.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
What can you do about 2 million severe problems when you can maybe solve, I don't know, 50, 100, 1,000, depending on the issue, per month? Absolutely nothing. What can you communicate with management in that situation?
But what's so interesting to add to all those comments there, Rob, you know, I think what you're hinting at or what you're moving towards is that PsyCognito emphasizes this importance of continuous testing. So how do you see generative AI changing that frequency and scope of security testing in the near term?
That's a great question too. And that's one of the toughest to solve. So first off, I'll just say that you need more than just AI because, for example, you need extremely serious infrastructure built the right way to test millions of applications every day and not break them and also not cause huge, huge noise to the SOC team and folks who are operating all of these security controls. But speaking of AI specifically, there are two critical parts to this problem. The first part is the configuration part. Today, to run any kind of a scanner, you need to configure it in a super specific way. You have to point it at a specific asset that is going to scan. You need to decide what kind of scan it's going to run. You sometimes set some restrictions, etc., etc., guide rails. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is validating what's real and what's not when it finds these 200 potential issues, of which only one would be a true positive. And that can take between days and 2 weeks to validate on a single application, right? And it's very easy to understand that if it takes, call it 2 weeks to do that on a single application and you have thousands of them, chances are that you will not be able to cover more than a few hundreds, even if you have a huge security organization, which is exactly the reality. So problem number one, the configuration part. If you're using AI for mapping the attack surface and contextualizing what each asset is in terms of its nature, how critical that is, what's deployed there, what kind of data seems to be stored on the machine. These are actually the questions that the human being would ask themselves and figure out and configure these scanners based on which. So that's one of the problems we had to solve, for example, to be able to massively scale dynamic application security testing. The second part on validation is just as complex. So that is a lot about fuzzing. So you try to ask, quote unquote, many, many different kinds of questions or requests, this application, you get all of these responses. And based on the responses, you're supposed to understand, is there a potential issue here? And is it possible to exploit this application? Now, since over the years, you accumulate tons and tons of logs and user feedback, you can actually use AI to understand, is there an SQL injection vulnerability here? And even point at the part of the response that tells you, that's why I believe it exists. And so, for example, in our product, instead of showing you the 200 potential issues, it would show you the one SQL injection on this payment mechanism or what have you, will show you the request that triggered the vulnerability and the HTTP response based on which we believe there is indeed this SQL injection or XSS or whatever critical issue. And that saves so much time for the security teams because that way, one, you're only looking at one critical thing on one asset, maybe times 5 or 10 in a given time. And two, the validation process is extremely easy. You can easily replicate what triggered or made our machine believe that the vulnerability exists, and the 95% precision rate tells that story exactly, as well as the mean time to remediation reduction. If you can reduce it from months to days with the same team size, it tells you everything you need to know. And that's a good way, by the way, to assess whether your existing capabilities, processes, etc., are taking you where you want and need to be.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate this whole background into the context and like the underlying infrastructure and metrics of how PsiCognito works. You know, from what I've just heard you sharing, Rob, it definitely sounds like there's a strong focus on these AI decisions being made explainable and trustworthy to your clients. But I'm sure it's still the beginning. You know, as you're continuing to scale PsiCognito, you know, looking ahead, what are some additional potential advancements that you're seeing, maybe in generative AI or other parts of the industry, that you're most excited about for improving cybersecurity? Part one. Love to hear that.
Yeah, maybe I'll touch a couple. One area that is super interesting is the whole domain of threat hunting. So today, for those who are not familiar with the domain, it relates to various data sets. So darknet forums and stolen information in various places over the internet, where as a security professional in this enterprise, I would need to constantly look at thousands of alerts of potential data sets that might relate to my company to figure out, one, does it relate to my company? Number two, is it real? Because interestingly, 99% of these publications are not real. Today, a human being has to take a look and figure that out, which takes a lot of time and requires big teams. And number three, figure out, what do I need to do about it? So One exciting area is leveraging the attack surface business context, in a sense, to automate the threat hunting process, understanding better how likely these leaks and darknet chatter, how likely it is that it's related to my company, and is it related potentially to machines, applications, environments that, based on automated testing already done, are likely to be real. Because if we learn that there is this machine in this manufacturing facility that is extremely exploitable, and then there is a data leak related to that facility or that network or small subsidiary, it's much more likely that that one would be the real one out of the 100 or 1,000, sometimes 100,000 others that were published in the last days or year. So that's one area that is very exciting and related to our space. Another one that is unrelated to our space, not directly at least, is the whole notion of training. And it's extremely relevant both to cybersecurity, but also to so many other spaces, maybe every single domain in life. In cybersecurity, for example, what it means is, today, if I want to run a phishing campaign internally to, well, phishing training campaign to train my team, I have to come up with a theme. I have to manually build the content that the campaign is going to use. And the content is probably going to be generic to the company or the department, because I'm not going to generate user-specific email or what have you, or text per person. However, with LLM, I believe we'll see various vendors and companies actually do that, which would be massively more realistic, efficient, more continuous, and hopefully will help us as society to train folks better, and not just at enterprise, but even like our family members, train them better on what's phishing, what's not phishing, because that continues to be a big threat.
Awesome. And I mentioned that question, that was part one, right? What was most excited about for the improving cybersecurity? Now, part two, and you may have hinted at this earlier, but conversely, what developments concern you the most?
I would say that in cybersecurity, what's concerning is the exponential reduction in mean time to exploit. From the moment that the new vulnerability pops up or a new asset exposure happens to the moment that attackers find exploitable assets and attack them. And various risk leaders shared with me in the last few months that, and you know, folks who have been doing it for 20 plus years are saying that now it takes just a couple of days. I think CISA says the same, couple of days for attackers to exploit new vulnerabilities. And most organizations are still using traditional / legacy stacks of manual pen testing, very basic vulnerability scanning, semi-manual vulnerability prioritization processes, quite traditional asset management processes where heuristics are not used, for example, etc. And that stack is simply, it cannot compete with the efficiency of attackers using AI and other methodologies that are just so efficient. And when you take into account that it takes organizations time, especially large enterprises, some time to figure out what their problems are exactly, what's the right approach, then start to look at solutions, etc. For some, it can take years, but attackers move within days or weeks to better and more efficient methodologies, and it massively pays off for them too. Obviously, I think that there have been many researchers saying that being an quote-unquote attacker or hacker, offensive hacker, has the highest ROI of anything you can do in life today. And when you think about all of these countries in various areas in the world where the average salary is $200 a month in Eastern Europe, for example, and lower in some other areas, it's surprising you're not seeing even 10 times more people doing these things. It's good that's the current state. I don't know for how long that would stay, but that's a very worrisome situation. And that's why I think it's important that risk leaders speak up more on what's working, what's not working, what are the key things to measure. Board members are challenging folks more on this stuff now, and more about, you know, metrics versus are we using the shiny new whatever. I think that's critical just to be able to withstand and rise with the occasion here.
Rob, as we wrap up, I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak directly to our listeners. What's the most important thing you want them to take away from our conversation today? And what's one actionable step they can take to engage further with your work or the ideas that we've discussed?
I would say that so much is happening these days, both on the, call it, problem statement, be it in general, in whatever space that you're in. We need to be more productive as organizations, massively more so. My number one advice is adopt critical thinking about, one, what's happening around you and your actual organization's top priorities, and be curious, learn, and challenge what leadership thinks that should be top priority, and especially in terms of how do you get there and how do you measure that progress. Simply doing cool new things, which is often not a bad idea, will not necessarily get you to anywhere good. So critical thinking is just such an important thing these days. And actually, AI is making us sometimes lazy a little bit because there are so many low-hanging fruit scenarios where a lot can be done, but it can only solve 80% of your problem. Anyone who used any LLM learned that probably within seconds or minutes. So that's just a dangerous trap, or having critical thinking there is extremely important. As it relates to Psycognito, we help many security teams, now over 20 of the global 100 companies, to understand how attackers see their external exposure and external attack surfaces, using AI, machine learning, and many modern techniques, as well as actual attackers' experience and approach, and making it extremely relevant to understanding what are the five things that can help attackers breach your company. So always happy to talk to folks who want to learn more about the topic and solving these problems for their organizations, and excited about this space and everything that is going on.
Fantastic. Well, Rob, so great to have you on Humane. Rob Gorziev, the co-founder and CEO of Psycognito.
Thank you, David.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.